In today's world, politics appears to be a thing of the past, at least as we used to know it. What he says is that liberalism used to fight, it used to have as its polemical opponent, political enemies that offered alternate systems. For example, conservatism, monarchism, traditionalism, fascism, socialism, and communism. So it had enemies throughout its history that it fought against, but by the end of the 20th century, it had defeated them all. And the question Dugin raises is, why is it that at the end of the 20th century, when liberalism has become victorious, why didn't all of the opponents of liberalism band together to present a unified front against it, as you might have expected them to do, or as he says, one might have expected them to do? How did it happen that after its 20th century victories, liberalism found itself without any serious opponent at all? So Dugin is suggesting that when liberalism no longer faced ideological enemies of that sort, big time public enemies, that political configuration, ideological political configuration characterized the 20th century. You had big groupings with followers who can put each other into mortal danger. But when liberalism was the last ideology standing, things changed qualitatively. The field of the political, constituted by public friend enemy groupings, collapsed or imploded. When liberalism faces ideological enemies, it's in the foreground. It's something you can choose, you can fight for, defend, oppose, or attack. It's one of a number of alternatives. When it no longer faces ideological enemies, as happened at the end of the 20th century, it somehow transforms, disappears into the background, becoming no longer one of a number of things or ideologies here competing for space, but rather, as it were, becoming space itself, the very context that has now become the default political operating system or system of coordinates. So that's a crucial point Dugin's going to make a couple of times in this and the next chapter, that liberalism isn't just victorious over its enemies. It is victorious and transforms the situation by becoming what is taken for granted. It's no longer an object in ideological space. It now itself defines that space, or is that space. If we start trying to oppose liberalism as an idea, he's saying, or as an ideological object in ideological space, we can miss that this shift, that it's the broader liberal background, the quote-unquote objective reality of the status quo, where the field of the political has imploded and society has become fractured. So one of the tasks as we go through this book and as we think about the concept of the fourth political theory, the project of the fourth political theory, is to keep that transformation from the foreground to the background in mind at all times. That's Dugin's point in that particular bullet point. That's what it means to oppose not the political idea, program, or strategy, but the quote-unquote objective reality of the status quo. Last point in that section is this. Finally, we need to construct an autonomous political model which offers a new way and project for this transformed world. And that's what this book does. He says it provides an overview of liberalism, communism, and fascism, the three political theories, and he says the closely related ideologies of national Bolshevism and Eurasianism that came close to the fourth political theory. The theory looks backwards to reconsider the 20th century from a new perspective and is a creative project for the future through its interpretation of our present. So it has all three components. It's not just an analysis of the past, it's not just a project for the future. It includes all of those moments in itself. And he says, still on page 13, also a point that is an important point with its surface and its deeper dimensions. The fourth political theory is an open project. It's not a hermetically sealed ideological dogma. The fourth political theory, he writes, is not the work of a single author. The book, you might think, yeah, the fourth political theory by Alexander Dugin. But the project of the fourth political theory is not the work of a single author, but, quoting Dugin, is rather a trend comprising a wide spectrum of ideas, researches, analyses, prognoses, and projects. Anyone thinking in this vein can contribute his own ideas. As such, more and more intellectuals, philosophers, historians, scientists, scholars, and thinkers will respond to this call. The last thing in the intro that I want to discuss is that Dugin says the creation of the fourth political theory is a matter of life and death for Russia. It's do or die, the question to be or not to be. That's even the name of the introduction. says introduction to Be or Not to Be. Russia cannot adopt liberalism, but neither are communism or fascism appropriate for it. It's either the loss of Russian identity as it dissolves into the global world order, or else the creation of the sort of alternative described by this book, according to Dugin. Obviously, I think it's fair to say that logic of dissolve into a global world order or not applies not only to Russia. So I offer the reflection that if we take together the title of the introduction, To Be or Not to Be, and the first sentence about in today's world, we see that this book, The Fourth Political Theory, stands at the intersection between questions that have always been important to political theory, questions that will always be important to political theory, and questions that are pressing to us now. And this idea of Dugin operating at the nexus of two junctures, in this case, modes of temporality, basically, one the present and one the eternal or the always important, comes up later in the book, where Dugin specifically treats of attitudes towards time. We can't just take for granted our current understanding of what present moment means, because it implies an understanding of time that he may or may not share, and that he explicitly treats in chapters on the ontology of time, for example, and also the relationship between theory and practice. There's a chapter later in the book where he tries to position the fourth political theory as existing between, so to speak, theory and practice, preceding them at a deeper level, preceding the split between theory and practice at a more fundamental level where they still are essentially united. These two components, to be or not to be on one hand and in today's world on the other hand, are already just such a sweet indication of the question between existence and time, theory and practice, eternity and the present moment, that hopefully we can bring out from chapter to chapter. So I now open it up to you.